Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Donut Dynasty. Nah, pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Yeah, pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty.
Diagnostic, popped it, now your team is the topic. Eitan and Stompy as a team, they're unstoppable. All bold, but no bold, it is roll in a roll that I'm told. Come a bowl to a cockpit. And I just hope there's no leaks, yeah. I ain't changed my oil in weeks, yeah. How'd I get a lot of these stains on my seats, yeah. Only mechanics that I trust cause it's free, yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. It's my dynasty team and it's got a couple needs. Is it this, is it that, is it picks, is it bad? Do I even have a chance, do I got it in the bag? Let me know.
Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty. Nah, pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Yeah, pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty.
Diagnostic, Gnostic.
Thanks for listening to the Dynasty Diagnostic Podcast. Tune in every week for a thorough inspection of the Dynasty landscape to learn how recent news affects your roster and to gather strategic tips and tricks to give your squad that turbocharged boost it needs. Please welcome your head technicians, Eitan Mosia and Sam Lane.
What's going on? Welcome to the shop. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the Dynasty Diagnostic Podcast, a part of the Dynasty Trade Calculator family of podcasts and brought to you by bestfantasyfootballleague.com and Fantasy Data. My name is Eitan Mosia. I'm here with Sam Stompy Lane. You can find me on Twitter at ETAN Mosia. Go ahead and follow Sam at FF Stompy. And our guest today is a former contributor at PFF at 4for4, DLF, and Bleacher Report. He's currently the man at the helm of one of the newest and most useful sports betting and analytics sites out there, the Quant Edge. Please join me in welcoming Elliot Crist.
How you guys doing? I appreciate the opportunity. Thanks for having me.
Man, we really appreciate you coming on.
Of course. Yeah, of course. I couldn't turn down, you know, the people's champion, the guy who wins the SFB8, is out there willing to show the world his manhood or whatever,
or whatever we lack thereof.
Yeah, I mean, no comment on that, my guy. I'm happy for you that things are going well.
I appreciate that, Elliot.
I love how that's the start of every single podcast now. It's just the guest commenting on the video. I love it. I absolutely love it. If you don't follow Elliot on Twitter, you should not be on Twitter. Go ahead and follow Elliot at Elliot Crist. One T, no H in the Crist, just in case you guys forgot. All right, so Elliot, you got your degree in marketing. You spent some time at a brokerage firm and eventually found yourself writing about football. So how do you kind of explain this winding path to figuring out what you wanted to do and actually, you know, figuring out a way into breaking into the industry?
Yeah, so I mean, I always wanted to work in sports. I just basically decided at 19 years old that it would never happen. And I was kind of the guy that, you know, I would say I'm intelligent, but I wasn't the hardest worker in college. I kind of more wanted to chase girls and drink alcohol. I probably shouldn't admit that publicly, but that was the college experience. I know that's pretty rare in this country that that's what you're doing when you're in school, but that was my college experience. And, you know, I got out and I took a safe job. I just took a job in finance and I thought, you know, I'll gamble on sports. I'll play DFS and fantasy and I'll just have some fun. But I'll just, you know, do the 9-to-5 thing and watch a bunch of sports. But then I realized ultimately that's not what I wanted to do. I left that job and found the part-time job at PFF. And really decided that I was going to go all in on it. And, you know, despite the fact that it was a part-time job, I'd work as a full-time job, put in like 100 hours a week, and try to build as many relationships, build my brand along the way, try to create more and more opportunities. And that's really kind of what's folded over the last 4 years. You know, it's a grind, and a lot of people want to do it. You know, people always say, what's the key to success? And, you know, hard work is obviously an answer. But I think two of the biggest keys to success. One is do something different. Be unique. Try to come up with some sort of different idea. Everyone's going to produce content. Come out with something that's different than people. So many people try to replicate others, and I think that's one of the things that gets them in trouble. And the other is network. You know, make friends, not enemies. I see a lot of people that come up in this industry, and they're newer, and the thing they love to do is they love to hop in Evan Sibley's mentions and tell them how much better they are at this than he is. And Evan's one of the nicest guys in the world. He's helped me a lot along the way. I know he helps a lot of people along the way, and that's not the right way to go about it. So, you know, it was absolutely a journey. It was a lot of hard work. It's been a ton of fun along the way. I've done anything from, you know, draft stuff to DFS stuff to a ton of talk about Dynasty and best ball. So it's been an amazing journey. It's sometimes I have to pinch myself that this is real life, but I love it.
Hey man, the community is better for your content. I've really kind of seen you come along. You do a lot with sports betting right now though, because that's primarily where TQE is focused. So I kind of wanted to ask you, like, what is the stopping point of sports betting? Have we even reached anywhere near what this could be, what this new industry could be? Or are we kind of just scratching the surface at just the types of money that organizations are going to pump into finding ways to provide content to these people that are seemingly a newer market, even though we knew they were always out there, just now it's legal, so it's more above board.
Yeah, so TQE does a ton with DFS as well, not just sports betting. But the sports betting market is, you know, it's a gold rush. You know, it's going to be an absolute massive market. You look at a place like Australia, and basically everyone there bets all their sports bars. Everything is geared towards betting. You know, $1 billion was bet last year in New Jersey alone just at FanDuel. And when you keep in mind there's like 11 books, and that's one state, you know, this thing continues to roll out. And yes, there's always been sports betting in America, and it's always been a massive market. You know, but we're probably talking about a market where you're going to end up seeing 100+ million people a year bet on sports. Now, they're not all going to be diehard bettors, but as the legalization continues to roll out, and the education of the public, and the fact that people lose the stigma of sports betting, that it's not some guy who's mortgaging his house, you know, trying to make sure the Bears cover -3, and if he loses, his entire family, you know, is homeless. Like, that's not what sports betting is. It's about trying to make as many decisions that have positive expected value over the course of time to build an ROI and have, you know, a 10% return on your investment that year. And if you look at that compared to any other asset class, that's way more successful than most asset classes. So, and it's a lot of fun to do it too. So I think we're just scratching the surface, and it's going to create more and more opportunities for people to build content. And fantasy fits into such a great way as a transition. One is 90% of people who play fantasy sports are open to sports betting. Two, player props are obviously a natural transition. And one of the things we actually did over at the Quant Edge is every NFL game, you can change a player's performance from average to great to bad. So we kept it simple. And if you get that player right, you actually hit about 67% of your bets. So once you change that player's projection, you can actually see its impact on the line and probability.
That's pretty cool, man. That is definitely useful information. Let's now get into our five-point inspection, but before we do that, let's go ahead and talk about one of our newest sponsors. It is Fantasy Data. You guys already know that if you want to hear some of the community's most trusted voices on the site, if you want to go ahead and check their advanced efficiency and player performance metrics on the site, or if you want to populate your own personal projection models, they definitely got something for you. The Dynasty Trade Calculator Network has got you covered with all of our exclusive tools. All of our exclusive codes over here. Dynasty20 is the code for you to go to Fantasy Data and start seeing what they have to offer. Again, that's Dynasty20. That will get you 20% off of everything that you could subscribe to. See you guys at Fantasy Data this year. It's a tale of two Achilles. Emmanuel Sanders looks back to being his old self, while Dante Foreman has become little more than an afterthought. do we really think that there's any long-term value for these guys? Just to kind of start, Emmanuel Sanders is a guy that's giving me a lot of the same feelings as Julian Edelman is for the Patriots. Like, he's one of those older receivers that seems like he can keep his value. Now, both myself and Stompy would be the first to admit we got this wrong. We thought the Achilles injury at this point in time, at this point in his career, was a death blow. But he came back and he looks the same old guy. Last season, he averaged the 18th most yards per route run in the entire NFL. He had a whopper of .54 last season, just below Juju Smith-Schuster and Brandon Cooks. And essentially what that is a weighted combination of receiving yards versus the total number of air yards available in an offense. This is a guy that has been a proven producer for a number of years. He's basically in a situation where there's no competition for him because all the guys around him are still just trying to get themselves established in the NFL. Noah Font is dealing with an injury right now. Cortland Sutton has had some flashes but hasn't really put it together just quite yet. I don't expect, you know, a really strong passing offense in Denver this season, but I can see Emmanuel Sanders having a lot of value. And if he gets re-signed or if he gets another 2-3 year contract like a guy like Julian Edelman, I think this time next season we can see him a lot in the same way and see him at the bottom of fourth rounds in drafts.
Oh, I don't know if he'll get to the fourth round, but Emmanuel Sanders, you know, I was with you guys. I don't draft guys coming off Achilles injuries, especially guys built on their quickness in their 30s. And he's 8 months removed and playing in preseason games, so it makes no sense. Like, medically, what Emmanuel Sanders is doing makes no sense. I think it's a low-volume offense. He and Cortland Sutton are going to compete to lead that team in target share. I think he's actually a guy I went from completely fading to I'll take some shots in the 13th round right now. From a dynasty perspective, I don't know. I think he's got a year or two left would be my guess before his value kind of falls off a cliff. But if you got him this offseason, you got him for dirt cheap. So you're probably winning anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I don't need to repeat that. Obviously, I was very wrong, and I said it on as much on Twitter. I just, talking to any physical therapist, any doctor out there, Achilles injuries are extremely tough to come back from. We rarely see players come back to form. And I don't know if we can really expect Sanders to be back to form, but he looked pretty good in that preseason game. So if you did grab him late and didn't listen to Eitan and I or Elliot, then you definitely I don't know if won the lottery is the right phrase, but you definitely hit some gold on that. But I think the big thing here is we can't expect this every time with injuries for NFL players. We can't expect Adrian Peterson type comebacks from ACL injuries. I don't really expect somebody like Cooper Kupp or Will Fuller to come back and perform up to par until about 1 year. Because, I mean, I believe Adrian Peterson tore his ACL in week 16, and then he came back and had his 2,000-yard season. You just can't expect that. And that's very much the same with Achilles injuries. And, I mean, Eitan, you brought up a good point here, is that we didn't see that with Deontay Foreman. We just have – and whether that is his work ethic or not and why he was cut, we just still haven't seen him come back – completely to form, and I believe he's going to be starting on the IR with the Colts. And leading into the next question is, I mean, Demaryius Thomas is also coming back, and he seems to be coming off the, I believe he was, came off the PUP this week, right?
Yes.
So, and I mean, it's the same argument here. You just can't expect these freaks of nature like Emmanuel Sanders, like Adrian Peterson, every time for an injury comeback. So I would be leaning on the do not draft Demaryius Thomas here, because I just don't expect him to be able to come back really at all, especially because he's more built on his jumping ability, and obviously your Achilles affects that as well.
Yeah, I mean, for me, Demaryius Thomas isn't necessarily somebody on my radar, just because even in the event that he comes back 100%, I mean, he is in a just extremely, extremely nebulous situation with the New England Patriots. I mean, look at all the guys around him. They're going to have to cut four receivers before we start the season. It's just crazy with the number of people that they already have doing well in that offense. Jacoby Myers comes to mind. They also have Julian Edelman. N'Keal Harry, even though he hasn't been getting rave reviews in this offseason, still exists. They still have Philip Dorsett. There's a number of people who could produce in what is also going to be a limited offense. That was kind of my parallel between Edelman and Sanders. The Broncos are going to be a low-volume offense. The Broncos are going to be a low-volume passing offense, but I think that's the same thing out in New England, because we've kind of seen this over the last couple of years. They average some of the highest run-to-pass ratio in favor of the run over the last couple of seasons, and I don't think that that's going to stop this season. So, it's a weird situation where it's something that maybe you shouldn't predict, but maybe we should start, you know, opening our eyes to, because Cooper Kupp has been getting positive reviews in camp as well, as has Will Fuller. Maybe medical science is beginning to get us to the point where we should worry just a little bit less than we did in the past. But I definitely hear what you're saying. And hey, guys, we're going to admit when we get it wrong. This was a situation where we did. If you managed to be one of those lucky few, more power to you with Emmanuel Sanders. So now let's move on to the next question. The Quant Edge has a cornerback wide receiver matchup tool that is really, really eye-opening when it comes to determining wide receiver strength of schedule on a game-to-game basis. I wanted to ask if there's a wide receiver or two you're staying away from in week one because of really stiff competition this season.
It's a little too early for me to definitively say I'm off a guy because of a week one matchup. Like, I still want to do more research. I do think T.Y. Hilton's going to have a tough matchup in Los Angeles. But ultimately, there's not someone definitively that I'm definitely staying away from at this point. Robbie Anderson has a really tough matchup with Trey White, but Darnold's been feeding him the ball, so he's... But Anderson also has probably the toughest wide receiver quarterback matchup of any player in the NFL this year. So I still have to do more week one research before I definitively say I'm staying away from a guy. But those are a couple that come to mind.
What about, I mean, and maybe you don't know this right off the off your top of your head, but are there any cornerback matchups that you're really wanting to avoid week to week? I mean, are there those shutdown corners that you're like, yep, we're definitely not even trying this week?
I mean, it's some of the big names are going to be pretty obvious, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Patrick Peterson, though he suspended six games, yeah. You know, Stephon Gilmore, Jalen Ramsey. There are guys that I'm like, Marshawn Lattimore is a great example. Chris Harris in the slot basically does not give up touchdowns. Now, there are other ones, guys like Byron Jones or Xavien Howard or William Jackson in certain situations. Basically, the entire Ravens secondary. A.J. Boye, Trey White's another good one. Xavier Rhodes, depending on the matchup. I mean, I can – Casey Hayward. I can go on a lot of these guys. But a lot of times it depends on the coverage they play, how the teams are going to roll out against them. You know, you want to make sure that the guy's an actual shadow corner, because so often we talk about – fading guys because of wide receiver or because of cornerbacks, and then they end up playing on the other side of the field,
right,
or the team will put them in the slot to avoid them. You know, the biggest thing I look at shadow corners is not just do they play left and right cornerback, but are they willing to go in the slot with the guy too? Because if not, you've seen more and more teams put their star player in the slot to get them away from the other team's top corner.
So going into the rabbit hole that is coach speak during the offseason, we've kind of got three main talking points this week. We've heard that Vance McDonald will not be an every down player, which I don't think many people were expecting. That Marlon Mack can gain more of a three down workload this year. Evan Silva, guy you mentioned before, was the one to kind of bring this to light. And then that Tariq Cohen may cede some passing work to other members of the Chicago backfield, which I think we all kind of assumed was the case anyway. Which one of these is the most... is the one that you should take the most away from and that you should kind of take to heart this season, so to speak?
I think Tariq Cohen, I think, is very real news. I don't think it's shocking, but he's such an uber-efficient player that he can still make the most of limited touches. I didn't expect Vance McDonald to be a full-time player because I think they're really going to use him in the receiving game. You know, they talk about he's going to be capped out at 70% of snaps. That's still, you know, a fair amount of snaps and basically obvious run situations he'll be out of the game. You know, you wish he played a little bit more, but it's not the end of the world. Marlon Mack, it's tough. You got to decide whether or not you believe the history of the head coach, the first 14 games of last season or the last three in these preseasons. So I think Marlon Mack's a capable receiver, even though his, you know, yards per route run numbers are terrible. If you look at him back in college, they put him in the slot even. He's an explosive athlete. So I think I buy that one. And if he becomes a workhorse back, Marlon Mack's a screaming value right now.
I have issues with it because I believe he had 83, or sorry, not he, but Nyheim Hines had 83 targets last season. But and then I'm sure somebody will come back and say, well, that was a significant portion of those were out without Marlon Mack. But I mean, and maybe you can enlighten or say something on this, Elliot. But it seems like they're trying to build a Patriots like backfield there with Marlon Mack as the Sony Michel, LeGarrette Blount, Mike Gillisley, whatever type, Nyheim Hines as the James White type, and then Wilkins is kind of the do-it-all guy, even though he was kind of rough last season. But so that's my issue with it. I don't know if I trust it because of that. I mean, it would be great if he was a three-down back, but that's what Nyheim Hines' skill set is. So that's my worry with that one.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair concern. I do think that's a fair concern. But at the same point, like, a lot of these players have played different positions in their past. And Marlon Mack is one of those guys that should be familiar, even playing some wide receiver in his past, and have some of that knowledge kind of already with him. We don't have a reason to believe that Marlon Mack isn't a good pass catcher. I think we have a reason to believe that Marlon Mack may or may not be asked to be a pass catcher. And I think that's the difference here. A lot of guys kind of pencil in running backs to roles that don't necessarily have them catching. But I think a guy like Melvin Gordon, who wasn't asked to do much in the receiving game initially and eventually kind of grew into that role, is just some evidence to we should not necessarily write off guys after the first couple of seasons. Things can change, and players are versatile enough to fill different roles oftentimes. But yeah, I think the Vance McDonald one will never be an every down player is also an interesting one because, I mean, Vance McDonald, you were saying, Elliot, he's essentially not going to be the inline blocker. And if that doesn't matter for fantasy, which is the world in which we live, then I don't see why we should care about snap share that much to that degree. I think he's still going to see a positive number of targets. I would actually shift this to Ebron. Jack Doyle is now playing again. We've heard Mo Alie-Cox is going to be involved this year. A lot of people are fading Eric Ebron. My kind of retort to that is oftentimes you see him split into that slot role. When he's on the field, he's often getting targeted. Yeah, there's a lot of reason to fade Eric Ebron, but would you kind of think maybe the same line of thinking applies?
Yeah, I mean, I think the big difference is that Jack Doyle is playing like 70% of snaps, and Eric Ebron played last year like under 50% of the snaps, most of the games that Jack Doyle played. I think Eric Ebron's also due for a ton of touchdown regression, so I have a lot of concerns there. Going back to Stompy's point about Nyheim Hines, that is what he does best. And I don't think he's going to be completely removed. I just think Marlon Mack might get a little bit more receiving work than people might have been anticipating. But I'd be shocked if they just completely write Hines out of the playbook.
All right, let's talk about David Johnson. Obviously, we expect a lot from this Arizona offense. We expect a lot from Cliff Kingsbury, but they are returning three offensive linemen that they had last season in Humphreys, Cole, and Pugh this season. At least in the preseason, we haven't necessarily seen a really increased level of play from that offensive line, but, I mean, that is what it is. We expect a different level of pace when the season actually begins. But it still looks to be pretty tough going for David Johnson if there's so many other slot targets available out in Arizona. Obviously, you have Larry Fitzgerald. Michael Crabtree doesn't figure to be in the slot too much, but they probably signed him because of Hakeem Butler going down. Andy Isabella still exists in that offense. Christian Kirk can be a guy to obviously challenge in that slot role. If this offense is not as good as we expect it to be, shouldn't we have a lot of the same concerns for David Johnson that we have for Saquon Barkley or Joe Mixon that are also poised to be on offenses that might not excite, at least early in the season?
Yeah, I don't have any concerns for Saquon Barkley this year. I know people talk about the Mike Tagliere stat about the top 16 offense. I mean, ultimately, with the way Barkley will be used in the passing game, his floor and his ability to break big plays, and he'll probably touch the ball 25 times a game. I mean, snaps and weighted opportunity is really what you're looking for. And the Cardinals having the opportunity to play the most snaps of any team in the NFL. That's what they want to do. They want to go air raid, four wide, spread teams out. They're going to have Kyler Murray run zone read with David Johnson. He'll play a lot of reps in the slot. He's also, yes, the offensive line's a major concern. The defense is also a concern. But I think with David Johnson, you're going to see his volume go up, his receiving volume go up, and his efficiency go up because they're going to use him the right way. Stop trying to run him between the tackles like Mike McCoy did last year. I mean, if you looked last year, they barely used him in the slot. They barely got him on linebackers and tried to run wheel routes. They had this fancy toy and they didn't know what to do with it. And I think Kingsbury's offense is very fantasy friendly. So if they're going to run 75 plays per game, I mean, their goal is 90, but they're smoking crack if they think they're playing 90 plays per game. Even 75 would lead the league last year by like three or four plays. So. But I think this offense will be locked in for 70-plus plays and that many snaps, and he's going to play 75% of them. I think he's going to have a real floor, and if that team plays catch-up mode, he's going to get a lot of PPR points as well.
I think the positive regression, like you said, comes from the routes and passing plays that he will be in there for. I mean, that defense is going to be abysmal, and especially in those first 6 weeks without Patrick Peterson, so they're going to be playing a lot of catch-up. I expect that David Johnson will be running a lot more routes out of the backfield and from the slot. And I believe Graham Barfield put out a tweet last season about, I think David Johnson ran 7% of his routes from the slot versus 20% the previous season or from the 2016 season. So that's how bad Mike McCoy was at using the weapon that is David Johnson, because he is arguably the best pass catcher out of the backfield in the NFL. I mean, they're going to be passing a lot. I think they're going to be playing a lot from behind, so I definitely expect David Johnson to be running a lot more routes and getting a lot more chances at catching the ball. And then I believe they were among the worst when it comes to pace of play. Last year, is that correct?
This team could not be having a different approach right. This year, more different approach this year from last year.
And if you think about it, he was the RB9 last season, and he had by all intents and purposes, it was a bad season, and I think a lot of people were expecting a lot more from him. But to be RB9 in a terrible offense with a very slow pace of play. Now you're going to a more creative offense. We'll see what it actually is in the NFL that will have a higher pace of play. You're going to expect a lot more production from David Johnson this season.
Now, let me make sure that I'm being clear here. I don't think David Johnson is not going to be draftable or not even going to be a first round pick. I just have concerns about him at 105. I mean, when you have the opportunity to go wide receiver at that point or to look at guys like Mixon or Bell right next to him. I'm not sure about Mixon. I think I'm kind of on the line with that one. But seeing the pace that we've seen from New York, at least in the preseason, seeing the steps that it looks like Sam Darnold has taken, I'm kind of thinking that offense is going to be good enough to support a guy in Le'Veon Bell who might be the better pick in the first round this year.
Oh, I'm on I'm on the opposite side of that one.
Yeah. That I mean
going... Adam Gase is the slowest paced coach in the NFL, right? They have no tackles. Both guards are currently on the shelf. I mean, hopefully Osemele and Brian Winters come back. I do think the Ryan Khalil signing is good, but you know, I know Gase running back has ever touched the ball more than 262 times. And I think Le'Veon Bell is getting drafted more on his name than his situation. You know, I think the David Johnson's going to be used more in the passing game. I think he'll probably get more touches per game, and the Cardinals will run more snaps.
Well, and I think the other aspect is you have guys like Ty Montgomery, Elijah McGuire back there. I mean, you have Chase Edmonds, sure, but then beyond that, what do you have? So, and the other aspect of this is that the New York Jets last season had the worst adjusted line yards, according to Football Outsiders. They were dead last in run blocking.
Where were the Arizona Cardinals, by the way? Just put it out there.
They were 25th. I mean, they were 25th, and that's fine. But with the point still stands is that David Johnson was productive last season with a bad offensive line for the Arizona Cardinals. We haven't seen Le'Veon Bell outside of Pittsburgh, where he had Mike Munchak as his offensive line coach, and they had fantastic offensive lines basically every year he was there. So yeah, I think Le'Veon Bell will get volume. I just don't think he will be overly efficient.
I do say that. I would ask if both of you guys give any credence to the notion that maybe something like pace is less of a view on the coach and more of a view on the quarterback that is actually in charge of the team. I mean, if the play comes in, at that point, it's kind of in his hands to go ahead and snap the ball. Do you think that there's any, I guess, considerations you can make for a guy like Adam Gase for a lot of his career having to deal with quarterbacks who didn't necessarily have that much experience or who hadn't shown all that well in the little experience that they did have?
This is the third time that Adam Gase has been said to get a good quarterback that he's going to mold, right? I mean,
yeah.
Sam Darnold is the most talented one, I'd say, but Jay Cutler was thought of as a good NFL quarterback when he got there.
Yeah.
Brian Tannehill was considered he was a first-round pick, right? And they hired Gase to develop him, and it didn't work. I mean, one thing about Adam Gase, too, is, like, he's, 20-6 in one-score games. If that regresses to the mean, which everything in history says it will, you just look at his games outside of that. I mean, his point differential is historically bad. His record is historically bad. You know, he played a lot of slow games to keep games close. And if you look at the Jets defense too, he may have to do some of that because they're not going to be able to rush the passer and cover. So, you know, I think there's real questions around the Jets that I think a lot of people have been ignoring.
And so it's not just Robbie Anderson that you're fading, I take. It's everybody on that Jets offense.
No, I mean, I'm interested in Robbie Anderson. Jamison Crowder is a fine late buy. Sam Darnold's basically free in redraft and best ball right now. Le'Veon Bell, you're paying that name value. You're paying the price as if he's basically still on the Steelers, and he's not.
All right, so now let's shift to what, and we can kind of connect the next two with this, what your most contrarian take is for the 2019 season, and if there's a preseason darling that might be one of these guys, Tony Pollard is a guy that comes to mind. Obviously, a lot of people are talking about Jacoby Myers and Preston Williams. Do you think that maybe any of these guys is going to be something worthwhile this season? And would that factor into what your most kind of out of this world take is?
I'm not sure what my most out of the world take is. I mean, Tony Pollard's been a guy that I've been buying up all offseason. Now he's kind of shot up. Darwin Thompson's a guy that's shot up. I really like Justice Hill. I think Curtis Samuel can finish as a top 15 wide receiver this year, but he's shot up the draft boards. I think one of my biggest problems right now when I look at drafts is all the guys I really liked have now completely jumped 3, 4, 5. I mean, the case of Pollard, like 6, 7 rounds. So I'm not – I mean, I guess if I had to go my boldest take, I think that we're going to – Curtis Samuel's 2017 Tyreek Hill.
Ooh.
Ooh, wow.
So that's not wide receiver over one, one overall like last year. But I think that, you know, 4.31 speed, is he hasn't really played wide receiver that long. We're really seeing him develop. You look at his separation stats. You look at his ability to get open from PFF or next-gen stats. And the fact that he's been the best player according to all reports from training camp, OTAs, mini camp, you know, joint practices, whatever it is, I think he has a chance to absolutely crush this year. And that doesn't mean I hate DJ Moore. I really think it could be like a Thielen, Adam Diggs situation where these two just completely dominate the wide receiver targets.
So you think Cam Newton can support both Christian McCaffrey and both of those two, or do you think that a little bit of the load is taken off of CMC?
No, I mean, CMC is still going to get his. I mean, I really think this offense is just going to be super concentrated.
Yeah, I mean, I can get behind that. Just and we've talked about Curtis Samuel on here a bunch. And I, nothing against DJ Moore, but if we're talking about a four-round difference between Samuel and Moore, I'm definitely taking Samuel because I think both will perform, give or take, at the same level this season. And but beyond that, who do you really have? I mean, you have Chris Hogan, but Chris Hogan lost a step last season, and we just not – I think he's just about done, and he's really the only wide receiver three there. Greg Olsen, I always make the joke that maybe he's only playing on one foot, but really he's had 2 foot issues in the last 2 years. He's what, mid to late 30s. Like, I just don't expect him to last the season. Ian Thomas is a second year tight end who, while I like Ian Thomas, he's not the same type of player as Greg Olsen, and I doubt that Cam and Ian Thomas will have that type of chemistry if Greg Olsen goes down. So I completely agree. I think it's concentrated between three players. And just to talk about my contrarian takes, we know what my contrarian takes are: Albert Wilson, top 24 wide receiver, Lamar Jackson, top 10 QB.
I think he'd be top 5 for the record. I'm very much on board with you.
Yeah, I agree. And as I've been writing about that and arguing about it, and hearing people like JJ and you and I think Davis has said it. Davis Maddock has said it too. But like his ceiling, and if you really look at it, if he can throw for, let's just say, 200 yards a game and run for over 1,000 yards, and yeah, and I mean, a lot of people.
I'm just laughing because if he could throw for over 200 yards a game, sounds like such a low.
Oh, it
low
does. And, but that's and it, where but we're at.
Yeah, I know.
And
that's all that's needed.
And,
honestly.
Well, and if he runs for 1,000 yards, like, that's bananas. Like, that is a top 5 season, possibly QB1. I'm not going to say he could be the QB1.
But he could be RB. He could be a top 12 running back with just his rushing.
Yes, right. And then you add in 3,200 yards through the air, 15 to 20 touchdowns, and you're right there.
I mean, I think what's the statistic that gets thrown around is any quarterback who's ever rushed for over 700 yards has finished as a top 5 quarterback. His rushing prop this year is 825 yards.
You're right. Yeah. So there you go. The only
concern would be injury.
This sentence is very hard to say, so yeah. Bear with me. Of all the quarterbacks' least points in the NFL, Lamar Jackson scored the highest amount in his worst game. So just to clarify that sentence, it's not an easy one to get out there. His worst game was 16 fantasy points last year. The second worst quarterback was Mahomes at 13 for his worst game. So Lamar Jackson's floor is amazing. I mean, this is a guy who's scoring 16 to 26 points at the quarterback position without throwing the football.
Right.
Rushing gives the highest floor, highest ceiling of any of quarterbacks. It just does.
Well, there you go, everybody. I wasn't being bold enough.
Is there ever a situation in fantasy leagues that we think maybe that starts to be dimmed just a little bit to make things kind of fair for guys that don't have the rushing element? Or do you think the way that things are kind of going in the NFL looks like mobility is being more and more and more of a focus every year, that this is kind of just where everything is going to go eventually? And we're going to get to a time period that the pocket passer quarterback is kind of the guy that, you know, is a little bit abnormal from everybody else, is a little bit different.
I mean, I think that, you know, that's why Aaron Rodgers is considered so talented, right? Because he has that mobility and the everything in the pocket. I mean, I believe that what you can do in the pocket and what you can do with your arm is first and foremost. anything you can add with running ability and the way to keep defenses honest and zone reads and holding different players and like the what you can add, the kind of pressure you can add to a defense is, you know, it's hard to even quantify. It's a tremendous pressure on the defense to try to match up with a guy like Kyler Murray in that offense, right? And that's one of the reasons why people are very excited about him. In fantasy, for me, like if a quarterback has no rushing upside, I tend to get in today's day and age, I kind of pass on him. It's just there's so many guys like you mentioned. Josh Allen was horrendous last year as an NFL quarterback, was scoring 19 points a game in the second half of the season, or 19 or more points per game in the second half of the season. You know, he can't hit the broadside of a barn, but he can run 9 times a game and get 30-yard pickups because he's uber athletic and it's open field in front of him.
Is there ever a situation where, at least in the interest of dynasty leagues, you look at some of these guys like Josh Allen, who at least haven't shown that they can get it done through the air, and start to worry if turnovers continue to kind of be a problem if they're benched, a la a guy that we saw kind of had a lot of rushing to his game, nothing compared to these numbers, but a guy that had a decent amount of rushing to his game, Blake Bortles, initially when he came to the league. Do you think that there's just a danger that it might be, you know, here today, gone tomorrow for these types of quarterbacks?
I mean, first-round picks tend to have a job for 4 years. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, obviously Josh Rosen is the major exception to that, right, because he doesn't have a job, but and never really got one. But no, to be honest. The NFL changes so much over the landscape of the NFL changes so much over a 2-3-4 year period. I think once you try to start predicting what's going to happen 4 years out from now, you're getting into murky territory.
That's definitely fair. That's definitely fair. All right. So now let's get into our dynasty diagnostic. But before we do that, let's go ahead and check in with our sponsors, bestfantasyfootballleague.com.
What's going on, guys? My name is Eitan Mosia. You know these sultry sounds from the Dynasty Diagnostic. What's happening, DTC family? I am here to tell you about bestfantasyfootballleague.com. It's actually been around for 19 years, and what these guys do is they allow you to play in any league format that you can dream up. If you want to play in a 1 quarterback, 3 running back, 4 wide receiver league, these guys got you. For Dynasty Leagues, best ball leagues, redraft leagues, whatever your little heart can desire, bestfantasyfootballleague.com has got you this season. And on top of that, money is even no object with these guys. If you want to be the type of dude that's putting in $20 into this league and wants to see if these players work out, you can do that. If you're the type of guy who's willing to take a stand on the hill of a guy like Damian Williams and tell everyone that he is a top 5 back and willing to put $2,999 behind that assertion, you can do that with bestfantasyfootballleague.com. All you have to do is go ahead to the Dynasty Trade Calculator website. You can click the banner at the top. You can also click Join the League on the right-hand side. It'll take you straight to bestfantasyfootballleague.com, and you can play against me, Stompy, John, JP, Izzy, all kinds of people from the DTC family on any of their leagues this upcoming season. Again, bestfantasyfootballleague.com, guys. I expect to see you there. See you on the next one.
All right, and just to let you guys know, bestfantasyfootballleague.com is offering a free $20 best ball to all DTC listeners who join a league priced at $49.99 or more. All you have to do is this coming Saturday be set to get on their site, and you can join in one of the busiest draft day weekends on bestfantasyfootballleague.com. See you guys there. Let's now plug in the analyzer and get to this week's Dynasty Diagnostic. And our episode 42 roster was submitted by Victor Coda. You can find him on Twitter at VictorCoda34. Please be sure to give him a follow. If you want to be part of next week's show, all you have to do is follow the Dino Diagnostic podcast, smash that subscribe button, and leave us a review at the link in the description on iTunes and or Podbean. If you want to get to the front of the line, just give our sponsors a look and let us know about it. So let's get right into this roster. This is a 12-team Superflex roster, 1 point per reception, a tight end premium, 25-man roster, 6 taxi squads. Start 1 quarterback, 2 running back, 2 wide receivers, 1 tight end, 1 Superflex, and 1 flex. And we are going to start at the top. Deshaun Watson, Carson Wentz, Mitchell Trubisky. 2 of these guys, I would say all 3 of these guys, really have mobility.
I would watch what you say here, because I believe Elliot Chris is a Trubisky guy.
But what I will say is that two of these guys, in Trubisky and Watson, have the ability to be rushing threats on the ground, and that gives them some added floor. Looking at Carson Wentz, he's pretty mobile as well. I don't think we'll see the same amount of rushing production from a guy like Carson Wentz, but Watson, Wentz, and Trubisky in a Superflex league seems to me like, I mean, wow, you might even need to trade away one of these guys to be able to get some value that maybe you can put somewhere else. And looking at the rest of the team, that's something that I would consider doing if you can get something like a veteran backup in return. What do you guys think?
Yeah, just to be very clear, I'm a Watson guy, not Trubisky guy.
Okay.
There we go. So Mitch Trubisky.
I had a lot of Trubisky last year in fantasy because of that rushing upside. But looking at this roster, it seems pretty obvious what he needs to do.
Yeah.
And you're loaded at wide receiver, you're loaded at tight end, and you're loaded at quarterback. And I mean, you took zero running back to a whole new level. You don't have a running back. I mean, I really like Justice Hill, but you have to trade a quarterback for a running back, and you can't play that many wide receivers. You have to move guys around.
Mind you, he also has 7 firsts and 9 seconds in 2020.
That doesn't even make sense.
I know.
Every person in this league traded him their first round pick, essentially.
So I will say, last year before Scott Fishbowl, I want to thank Elliot Chris for helping me to that championship, because I believe there was a tweet from you about Mitch Trubisky, and I took him as my second QB, and that helped me on my way to a championship. So there's that.
There we go. Yeah, I said I did an article for 4-4 why I thought he was a really good late round buy.
Right.
Yeah, my QB2 was Patrick Mahomes in Superflex. So wow. In Scott Fishbowl. So I had a good run, but obviously did not have as good a run as you did.
So, I mean, yeah, you're not going to go anywhere wrong with these QBs. If you can, I would be trading your picks for running backs. But, I mean, even if you can trade somebody like Trubisky for, let's say, a Nick Foles plus, I'd be doing that because I was doing some research because I have Andrew Luck on a dynasty team as my QB1, and obviously we just don't know what Andrew Luck is going to be this season, or if he's going to start the season, or what's going on. So I needed to look for another quarterback, and I believe it was between Foles, Flacco, and Jacoby Brissett. And just doing some research, Nick Foles, I mean, more his offensive coordinator, has had over five in since 2012. John DeFilippo's offenses have gone, and this is as a quarterback coach and an offensive coordinator, has thrown for over 500 attempts in every season, over 600 attempts, I believe, in 5 seasons since 2012, including the 2 seasons as his OC. And I believe he was like a 65% pass to run ratio last season with the Vikings. So I don't know if that's necessarily going to be the case in Jacksonville with Fournette and the way that team's built, but it seems like they want, or DeFilippo wants to throw, and the hiring of DeFilippo, they want to shift their offense a little bit in Jacksonville. So if you could get somebody like Foles as your third QB, I'd feel pretty comfortable with that, and then upgrade at running back if you can.
If you guys are looking to upgrade at running back, let's assume that we're trading Trubisky of this trio. What is the running back or running backs that you're looking for? Is there a guy or two that you're kind of thinking won't be, you know, too incredibly expensive to acquire that can give you a really, really good RB1 workload? Or do you think you're really going to have to, you know, put Trubisky out there and maybe even add to it to go after one of those top 4 guys?
I mean, look at his team. He's got 7 first-round picks, and he's got all the talent at wide receiver.
Yeah.
There's not legitimately. He wanted to get Barkley and McCaffrey. He's got
that. You know, that's what I think happened. I think he traded both of them. That's the only way this could have happened right now.
He could add Barkley, McCaffrey, and Kamara with the kind of team he had.
Yep.
He's gonna win this league for a very long time if he doesn't completely, like, even guys like Michael Gallup is your wide receiver. What is it? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. He's a 9th wide receiver with 7 first round picks in 9 seconds. Like, I almost feel like he's lying about this team.
No, he showed me the pictures. he sent us the pictures. Like,
But I don't believe 12. I just think it's a two-team league, and the other guy has all the running backs.
Maybe that might be true. For me, I think this is kind of like a word to the wise or a warning not to do this. I get it. 2020 is a class that a lot of us have been hyping for a little bit. But you don't want to sell your big guys, your superstars, because you want those young 2020 guys. Like, if you have, I had another guy who asked me about a trade. I think it was like, would you trade Kerryon for a mid to late first? And I was like, absolutely I would, because Kerryon, while he has his injury history, showed success in the league already, looks to be and have an RB1 workload, though there's that tweet out there about him being pulled off on third downs. But ignoring that, looks to have that RB1 workload. So give me the proven guys that will have those RB1, wide receiver 1, QB1 type workloads over a prospect. And that's fine to have some of those firsts, have multiple firsts, but trade some of them. Get somebody like Nick Chubb, like Alvin Kamara. I mean, you could, like Elliot said, go after some of those big guys, because if you had running backs here, you would have a win now team. And as we go through this roster, I mean, like Elliot, I mean, you're so deep at wide receiver. You're extremely deep at tight end. And obviously your QBs are fantastic. Now trade for running backs and you will be in a win now situation where you could get a lot of good young running backs and win for the next 3 to 4 years.
On top of that, for me, you just always want to hedge. You don't want to put all your eggs in the basket of one rookie class. So many things can happen in this year. So many people can get injured. So many people can get off the radar that you didn't necessarily see coming. And this class that we think is vaunted, that we think is going to be a great class and a great addition to the fantasy football landscape, might look a lot different by the time that we're drafting next season. So for me, look, 9 or 7 firsts in 9 seconds in a single class, you're not even going to be able to use all of them. So after you trade the 4 or 5 that you can trade to go ahead and get those running backs, I would also say diversify a bit and maybe get a couple of 2021s just in case people don't declare this class or something else unforeseen happens.
No, I mean, it's a pretty obvious. I mean, honestly, I think it seems pretty obvious. You know, just you should feel out with all the different running backs. I mean, even if you want to just, you have 9 second-round picks, just start off and offering multiple seconds for guys like, or a second-round pick for a guy like Damian Williams. Take that swing.
Yeah,
you know, you can go in so many different directions. Just get some running backs and win the championship.
Like honestly, and this is just something I was thinking about. If you traded Trubisky like 4 of those firsts in a couple seconds, you could get like I said, Foles, let's say Chubb, Carson, Ingram, and then you're competing, and then you could probably get like a Damian Williams, like Elliot said, and you would be fantastic because you only need to start 2 running backs. So you need to get rid of those 2020 firsts.
Yeah, I don't know why Sam picked this team. I mean, he says he picks all the teams that he sees. I feel like this is one that you saw that you were just like, this is so ridiculous. We need to find a way to get this on the show.
I honestly, I didn't even see the picks until you guys mentioned it. And then I just... It's a joke. I mean, 7 first-round picks. You know what people would do for 7 first-round picks in 2020?
Unspeakable things. Absolutely unspeakable things. It's crazy. It's crazy, this team that you built. Honestly, this is kind of a situation where you just go after guys that you like. Just anybody you like the look of. I mean, you have all of the capital, all the ammunition to get it done. So, hell, you have O.J. Howard. If you want George Kittle too, go ahead and do it. If you want to add to Evan Diggs and Cooks, you can do that as well. But yeah, the only thing you need is RBs to be any type of competitive. We're not going to talk about what we feel about this team because this team is obviously a championship contender as long as you trade a few of those picks for some running backs. Before we return the keys, Elliot, I kind of just wanted to turn the mic over to you. Thank you so much for coming on. I want to give you an opportunity to just talk about what's going on at TQE this season, what people should be excited about, and what you look forward to bringing to the masses this season.
Absolutely. So we're launching our 4 new tools next week, a pace tool. So everything you can want to know about different teams in the NFL, from plays per game to no huddle percentage to how teams perform in neutral pace or when they're down by 9 or more, or up by 9 or more. It really helps you kind of for sports betting in DFS, game script tool, know where the ball's going and what kind of situations, dynamic rankings, where we're going to have ownership projections, TQE projections, and multiple experts rankings as well. And then weekly matchups, one of the things we really wanted to do was, you know, one of the questions you asked earlier about do you avoid certain cornerbacks or anything like that is every wide receiver is graded based on how that team performs versus wide receiver ones, versus wide receiver twos, and wide receiver threes on a weekly basis. On top of our injury tool, wide receiver cornerback matchups, optimizers, betting tool that hit 60% last year. So we're really excited. We just launched our new website. Again, thequantedge.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Elliot Christ. And this is a lot of fun, guys. I got to see one of the crazier dynasty teams and have good conversations. So I really appreciate you guys having me on.
Thanks so much, man. You can find me at Fantrax and Numberfire. Go ahead and follow what Sam's working on at FF Statistics. And most recently, go ahead and follow our newly founded FF Mercs. It's a consulting service to help you with all of your fantasy needs from DFS to Dynasty, Draft to waivers. We've got you at ffmercs.com. Go ahead and follow us on Twitter. Go to the Dynasty Diagnostic feed on iTunes. Give us a 5-star rating and review. It helps the podcast grow and helps us reach more listeners. Thank you for making it to the Dynasty Diagnostic Service Center today. Please be sure to keep up with your scheduled maintenance and catch us next time to ensure quality performance. See you on the next video. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see. It's the Dynasty Dynasty now. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty Diagnostic, popped it, now your team is the topic. Eitan and Stompy as a team, they're unstoppable. All bold, but no bold, they just roll in a roll that I'm told, comp a bowl to a cockpit. And I just hope there's no leaks, yeah. I ain't changed my oil in weeks, yeah. How'd I get a lot of these stains on my seats, yeah. Only mechanics that I trust cause it's free, yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. It's my dynasty team and it's got a couple needs. Is it this, is it that, is it picks, is it bad? Do I even have a chance, do I got it in the bag? Let me know. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the dynasty now. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see, yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the dynasty. Diagnostic, gnostic, gnostic, gnostic.